It's Bull's Eye on the Afternoon with Andy Bull Barch and Matt Douglas.
We are two wild and crazy guys
on AM 930 WEOL.
Minutes after 4 o'clock, hour number two of Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL. Andy Bullbarch saddled up alongside Matt Douglas. You've got us until 6:30 tonight, and then it's time for Cleveland Cavaliers basketball as they take on Charlotte. Tip time scheduled for 7. Pregame coverage begins at 6:30. Time now for us to head to the hotline, and we bring in a New York Times number one best-selling author. Today, his 40th book was released. It's titled Quarterback, which is a very interesting inside look at 5 different NFL quarterbacks. We bring in John Feinstein. John, thank you so much for the time today. How are you?
Andy, I'm good. Thanks for having me. Matt, how are you?
Doing well.
Well, we're doing great, even though it is gloomy and, you know, in the mid-30s, but, you know, you're in the Cleveland area, so I mean, that's...
Well, if it makes you feel better, it's gloomy and in the mid-30s here outside Washington, D.C., too, so
you have it.
We're all in the same boat right now.
Yes, we are, most definitely in the same boat. Well, a very, very intriguing look in your new book, Quarterback, an inside look at 5 different NFL quarterbacks. You cover Andrew Luck, Alex Smith, Joe Flacco, Ryan Fitzpatrick, and Doug Williams. Well, John, you tell some really incredible stories about all of these guys, but as you were putting this book together and telling the stories of all 5 of these guys, do you think that one guy may have had a more compelling story than some of the others?
That's a good question. At different times, I thought different guys were the most compelling that I was writing about. Doug Williams is unique because he was, for lack of a better term, my African-American voice. Having been the first African-American to start and win a Super Bowl as a quarterback, and has remarkable perspective on it since he was a rookie in the NFL in 1978 when a black quarterback was a major story. Even today, it's different, as he points out, to be an African-American quarterback. Alex Smith, remarkable guy, graduated from college in 2 years. Ryan Fitzpatrick, graduated from Harvard with a degree in economics. Not many quarterbacks in the NFL who can make that claim. In fact, he was the first Harvard quarterback to ever start an NFL game. Joe Flacco's won a Super Bowl, and yet right now, as we sit here speaking, there are people in Baltimore hoping he can't play Sunday because they want to see Lamar Jackson. Everybody always wants to see the next guy if your team isn't winning and the Ravens aren't winning right now. And Andrew Luck was a unique story because he had to deal with the pain, physical and emotional, of not being able to play for an entire season. And I think when you read what Andrew Luck had to say about what he went through mentally, at least as much as physically, I found that fascinating because he really opened up about how he found out how much he was connected emotionally to playing football, which he hadn't really figured out before then because he'd always taken it for granted that he was a football player. So at different times, different guys to me were the most compelling, and I think I was lucky because all 5 of them had compelling stories to tell.
New York Times number one best-selling author John Feinstein joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Today, his newest book, Quarterback, released. The inside the most important position in the National Football League. And, John, you had just mentioned the situation surrounding Joe Flacco, and I don't want to give too much of the book away here, but you go far beyond what these guys experience on the field. You also address the politics of the game as well. If you can, shed some light on Joe Flacco's story going back to this past April on draft day in the first round. I thought the story was really interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting and funny. Joe is, you know, his nickname in Baltimore is Cool Joe because he sort of, nothing really ever gets to him, either good or bad. And he, most of the time on the night of the NFL draft, if he feels like it, he might stay up till the Ravens pick and then go to bed. But he's not one of those guys who sits there and wants to hear what all the pundits have to say. But his friend Dennis Pitta, who'd been the Ravens' tight end until he had a hip injury that ended his career the previous season, was visiting him in Baltimore because he was there to sell his house, and Joe's family was in New Jersey. because Joe had just driven down. It's about 90 minutes from where he lives in New Jersey for some off-season workouts. And so they sat and watched the draft together. And the Ravens drafted 25th or 26th. They traded back, and they took a tight end. And Joe turns to Dennis and says, I'm going to go to bed. And Dennis says, come on, it's seven more picks. Just stay up till the end of the round with me. So Joe says, okay. And he had texted his wife to tell her that the Ravens had taken a tight end in the first round. And they get to the last pick. And sure enough, Roger Goodell walks up to the microphone and says, the Philadelphia Eagles have traded their pick to the Baltimore Ravens. And with the 32nd pick in the NFL draft, the Baltimore Ravens select Lamar Jackson, quarterback, Louisville. Well, now Flacco and Pitt are looking at each other like, what? What just happened? They took a quarterback. And as Joe is sitting there trying to figure out what to say next, his phone rings. And he looks at it, and it's John Harbaugh. And he picks up the phone, and John says, hey, Joe, we got you a tight end. And Joe says to him, he says, John, you're not calling me at midnight to tell me we drafted a tight end. And then, you know, Harbaugh explained how we thought it was an opportunity and we've got to look to the future. But that's a seminal moment in a guy's life when you sit there and watch your team draft your successor, because basically that's what the Ravens did that night.
Yeah, and as you mentioned a few moments ago, there are some people that are hoping they get a chance to see his successor sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and again, that gets back to how I begin the book, which is, again, it's with Joe Flacco. They lost to the Steelers at home last year, excuse me, played very poorly, and Joe came in because two guys have to come in and speak to the media, have to, after every NFL game, the coach and the quarterback. And Joe comes in, and the first question is, Joe, how would you assess your play today? And Joe said, I sucked. He said, look, we scored 9 points. I'm the quarterback. I'm responsible. We had 3 turnovers. That's on me, even though he threw 2 interceptions that literally bounced off his receiver's hands into defender's hands. But he wasn't going to bring that up. He wasn't going to throw receivers under the bus. And he said, so I was bad. I sucked. So an hour or so later, I walked out of the stadium, and I got in my car and started to drive home, and I was listening to one of those post-game shows, and they went to the phones, and the first caller comes on and says, when is Joe Flacco going to step up and take responsibility for the failures of this offense? And I'm thinking, other than saying I sucked, it's all on me, what else is a quarterback supposed to do? And that's sort of the point of this book, that when you are the quarterback, you are either the man, all caps, or you are the GOAT, all caps. There's no in-between. You know, the old cliche, and we're talking about it here with the Ravens, that when a team isn't going well, the most popular man in town is the backup quarterback. And when a team is going well, the most popular man in town is the starting quarterback. There's no in-between.
Well, and I think it's interesting that you mentioned that, because towards the end of the book, I thought it was really fascinating to hear Doug Williams kind of tell a lot of those same tales, because he talks about how being in the huddle, you are the man. I mean, if you win, you get the glory. You lose, it all kind of falls on you. And I thought he made some really interesting comments towards the end of the book along those same lines. You know, he's been retired. I didn't realize this. He's been done playing for about 25 years now. It's been a long time since he last played, but I thought that was really cool from his perspective to say, you know, there are a lot of guys out there that watch this game and they kind of get an idea that they think that they know what it takes to be a quarterback, but unless you're part of that fraternity, you have no idea what it's like.
And that's 100% true. You're absolutely right. And there are so many facets of that that you can't understand the beating that a quarterback takes. He's the one guy on the field who is consistently hit while he's going backwards. So he doesn't have any forward momentum to either keep him up or lessen the blow. He just gets hit. And all the guys will tell you that when they come in after a game, not when they're injured, when they come in after a game where they haven't been injured, and start taking off the uniform, they just kind of look around and make sure all their body parts are in the right places because they take such a pounding. And there is that emotional crucible that you know you're in, as Doug said, when you step into the huddle, that you are the guy. You are ultimately going to be held responsible for what happens in that game-ending drive. That's what Doug was talking about specifically in the instance that you're mentioning there. And I think it is a very, no doubt it's a very small fraternity, especially successful quarterbacks is a very, an even smaller fraternity. I mean, there's a long way from Nate Peterman to Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, let's put it that way. And I think that one of the things I tried to do in this book was to give people a sense of what it feels like to play quarterback in the NFL through the eyes of these guys. And I think they allowed me to do that because they were so willing to open up and give me their insights on playing the game.
Yeah, no question about that. Again, John Feinstein, New York Times number one best-selling author, his new book out today, Quarterback: Inside the Most Important Position in the National Football League. And, you know, I think when you get so much information, you definitely don't want to leave anything out. And, boy, you tell some incredible stories in here. After putting the book together, were there some elements of the position that you uncovered that maybe you didn't know about prior to writing the book?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt that I learned from these guys. And a lot of it had to do with how you deal with failure. Because every quarterback fails. I mean, look at Tom Brady this past weekend. It hasn't happened to him much, but it certainly has happened to him. Look at how frustrated Aaron Rodgers was when he didn't get the ball back because of the fumbled kickoff at the end of that game in Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago. And you what you understand is that the quarterbacks come to understand, as I mentioned talking about Flacco a minute ago, that it's always on you. It doesn't matter if you throw perfect passes and hits the receivers in the hands and it ends up in the other team's hands. It's your fault. You get paid more money than anybody. So you ultimately have to take the blame. And you know, the Ravens last year, again, I don't mean to keep referring to Flacco, but some of the examples just kind of scream at you. Their receivers were terrible. One of the reasons Ozzie Newsome is not going to be the general manager after this year is because he made some mistakes in the draft, which he hadn't made for years and years. He took Breshad Perriman in the first round. Now, Breshad Perriman was really fast, but he had one problem as an NFL wide receiver. He couldn't catch the ball. And that's an issue if you're a wide receiver. And I can't tell you how many times I saw Flacco throw passes that were right there where they're supposed to be that weren't caught last year. And it happens to all quarterbacks to one degree or another. Alex Smith in the playoff game, the Chiefs-Titans playoff game, his best receiver, Travis Kelce, got knocked silly at the end of the first half and didn't play the entire second half with a concussion. And I think that was ultimately the difference in the game because Kelce already had four catches for 66 yards in less than a half, and then he's not in there in the second half. So, but Alex Smith couldn't say, that's why we lost. He couldn't say we lost because Jeff Triplett made some unbelievably bad calls. Bottom line is, they lost. They didn't advance. Tennessee did. And that's part of the job and part of what you have to live with.
John, you also mentioned the relationship between Alex Smith and Ryan Fitzpatrick. I had no idea that these guys were close before reading the book. What is the relationship between these two guys, and what is it that's kept them so close?
Well, they're the same age. They were in the same draft. Ryan likes to point out that he was only taken 250 picks after Alex, and yet they're both in their 14th season in the league. As I said, both very bright guys. Alex graduated from college in 2 years. And ironically, if Alex hadn't been offered a scholarship by Utah, he would have gone to Harvard. And he and Ryan Fitzpatrick would have been teammates. Think about that. Two guys that good playing in the Ivy League at the same time. But he ultimately went to Utah, graduated in 2 years. Ryan got his economics degree at Harvard. His last season, Harvard was 10-0, and yet he didn't think he was going to play in the NFL. He was surprised when people started telling him he had a chance to get drafted, and he was drafted 6 picks from the end. But they played in celebrity golf tournaments together. They're both pretty good players, and they enjoy one another's company, and they text back and forth a lot. And Ryan sent me a very funny video because, surprise, surprise, his wife's also a Harvard graduate. His kids are very bright. And his son was able to – he bet Alex $20 that his son at the age of, I think, 8 would be able – to solve what's that puzzle? I can't even remember the name of it. It's in the book, but this puzzle that you and I probably could never solve, but he could do it in less than a minute. And Ryan sent me the video of him doing it in 52 seconds.
Wow.
And Alex was standing there witnessing it and went, oh, my God, this is ridiculous. So they have a lot in common with their children, their wives, both being football players, both being very smart guys.
And the book is filled with so many great stories about these guys. And you also hit on something here I have to ask you about, the Wunderlich test. It gets a lot of play around the combine and at draft time. Then we kind of forget about it for about the next 10 months until it pops up again. But you uncover some really interesting scores. And you also talk about Ryan Fitzpatrick's score and about how he skipped a question purposely as well. I thought that was pretty fascinating.
Yeah, he skipped. He didn't want to score a 50. Which is a perfect score. I think the only player in history to score a 50 was another Harvard grad, Pat McNally, who was a very good punter for the Bengals for many years. And Ryan, he has this thing where he doesn't want people just to judge him on the fact that he's bright. And the Wunderlich was easy for him. I think you're supposed to answer the questions in 15 minutes, and he needed 9. And he left one blank on purpose, and then he got one wrong, which really got him, upset him, so he only, quote-unquote, scored a 48. But my guess is if he'd been focused a little more, he easily would have scored a 50.
Yeah, and as you mentioned in there, too, I believe it was Mike Mamula, who was drafted by the Eagles, scored a 49 on this thing at one point.
Scored a 49, moved up to – the Eagles actually traded up to get the number 6 pick in the first round so they could take him. And Mamula was an okay player. He played 5 years in the league, but he was certainly nothing special.
Yeah, and look, it's such a crazy thing, too, because people look at that test, and I think because it's gotten so much hype in recent years, people put too much stock into it. But, I mean, you also took a look at guys who have been perennial Pro Bowlers that didn't do so well on that test also.
Right, including Aaron Rodgers, who's as smart as anybody I've met in sports. I mean, he's a very bright, thoughtful guy, and I think he scored 25 or 28 or something. And again, that kind of shows how overrated the test is. And I think there's a lot in the combine that's overrated. Tom Brady ran a 5.2840, and all the scouts said, well, he's not fast enough to play in the NFL. That's one of the reasons why he dropped to the 199th player chosen. And, you know, also the players get – why was Derek Carr not drafted till the second round? Because scouts thought his hands weren't big enough. Well, he's a pretty good player, isn't he? Drew Brees wasn't tall enough. He's only 5'11". Russell Wilson's only 5'11". So they dropped in the draft. And, you know, the one thing about all of the scouting that's done, you can't measure heart. And it's also the Wunderlich is not necessarily a way to measure smarts either, even though they would tell you that it is.
Yeah, no question about that. Again, the book is titled Quarterback, Inside the Most Important Position in the National Football League. It is available beginning today. John, this was a blast. Thank you so much for joining us here on the show today, and we certainly look forward to having you on again soon.
My pleasure, Andy. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much again. New York Times number one bestselling author John Feinstein joining us here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. The book is titled Quarterback. It's available today. It's his 40th book. That should tell you about just how incredibly successful he has been. I actually finished one of his books a couple of years ago. It's called The Minor Leagues, where nobody knows your name. I mean, so much great relatable material in there. That was a phenomenal read, and boy, this book is just fantastic. If you are a fan of the National Football League, heck, if you're just a football fan, Quarterback is just a terrific read.
Yeah, it actually sounds like you're just a fan of good stories. It's got some good ones in there. Fascinating to hear, too, and some fascinating quarterbacks out there, I think, that he decided to do. Ryan Fitzpatrick's a guy, I mean, he's a lot of fun to watch when he takes the field. He's a guy who takes that game as a game, but I'd like to see that.
Yeah, it's great, great stuff. All right, time for us to take a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. 90 minutes gone. We've got about 2 hours left. We'll get a local news update from Matt Douglas right after this. It's Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL.
Quarterback Dwayne Haskins gets the snap, feeds it off J.K. Dobbins, breaks it loose right side, 30, 20 in Nebraska, 10, 5, touchdown, J.K. Dobbins, 42 yards to the end zone.
This is the voice of the Buckeyes, Paul Keels. Join us Saturday as Ohio State travels to Maryland. We'll be on the air with the AEP Energy Buckeye pregame show beginning at 10:30 a.m.
This is Coach Urban Meyer. Lorain County's home of the Buckeyes is AM 930 WEOL.
High on weather on AM 930. It'll be at least a one dog night. clearing skies, low near 23. Sunshine Wednesday, high of 35.
I'm Jim Chesko with Your Money Now. This year's list of worst toys for the holiday season, based mostly on those that present choking, eye, or other safety hazards, has been unveiled by the consumer safety group World Against Toys Causing Harm, or WATCH. The list includes a Black Panther slash claw, a plastic Power Rangers sword, a Cabbage Patch Kids ballerina doll, and a stomp rocket that launches foam-tipped projectiles high into the air. Stocks gave up early gains and finished mostly lower. The Dow Industrials dropped 100 points. The S&P eased 4. The NASDAQ ended flat. Boeing dropped nearly 2% after the Wall Street Journal reported that the aircraft manufacturer withheld information from airline managers and pilots regarding a new stall prevention system added to two of its airplane models. The new feature may have been a factor in last month's Lion Air jet crash. It's now 12 consecutive daily declines for oil prices. Today, December crude plunged 7% to